Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. So, the recriminations continue, the blame game is afoot, and apparently it is everyone's fault. We aren't doing enough tests, we didn't prepare properly for the spread of the virus, we took too much time to shut down the economy, we don't have enough ventilators, our doctors are being put at risk by the government because there aren't enough protective pieces of equipment for them, and not enough people are being compensated for losing work or indeed their entire jobs. Is anyone else thoroughly sick and tired of listening to this constant whining and complaining about what's not being done? This terminal refrain of negativity from people who know less than nothing about dealing with a pandemic and politically motivated anti-Boris campaigners. I know I am, and I'm not going to entertain them anymore. We are, ladies and gentlemen, in the middle of the biggest health crisis of our lifetimes. Testing or not testing is a far more complicated conundrum than the likes of Robert Peston from ITV would have you believe. He was torn off a strip on his show last night by Deputy Chief Medical Officer Jonathan Van Tam, who explained that it was entirely wrong to imagine that the antibody test is the holy grail which will solve everything. Why on earth can people not accept that the government is doing its level best to solve this ghastly problem, and if they make a few mistakes along the way because scientific advice has not always been forensically delivered, then so be it. This isn't like working out the result of a football match. Please just exercise a little caution, lots of perspicacity, because this is way too important to be scoring points and trying to make out that you know better than everybody else. As I said yesterday, those briefings that we're seeing now every single afternoon by the government have become a laugh stock. The same three people asking the same three first questions, Robert Peston, Laura Kunzberg, Beth Rigby, all asking questions about what should have been done and what might have been done and what may have been done, instead of getting proper information that the public can actually do something with. 0344 499 1000. Coming up, we'll be talking to Tory MP Bob Stewart as the Ministry of Defence calls up 3,000 reservists, and we'll hear from Sophia Miles, who lost her father to coronavirus this week. Most of all, of course, we want to hear from you, and many of you say you want to talk about other things, so if that's the case, by all means, feel free to do so. But we need to hear your stories, good or bad, your experiences and what you're seeing and hearing out there, because you are the eyes and ears of the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. 0344 499 1000. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on the fastest growing radio station on the planet. It is, of course, Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Now, I find myself actually getting quite worked up this morning with all the nonsense that's being spoken by people who really don't know what they're talking about. Let's talk to Colonel Bob Stewart, who is a man eminently sensible, who we always turn to in these dark times when we need to get a voice of common sense. Colonel Bob, very good morning to you.
Hello.
How
good
are you?
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Is that the coronavirus alarm going off in the background?
I don't know what's going on.
I'll let you put that away.
It's not me.
Okay. Well, it sounds like it's you. How are you getting on, and how are you coping with it all?
Well, I'm getting stir crazy stuck in the house, but my goodness, I'm actually doing more emails than I've ever done in my life.
Yes.
So in a way, I feel actually I'm working harder,
yeah,
than being in Westminster.
Absolutely interesting, isn't it? I mean, I'm finding I'm talking a lot more to my children than I ever used to do because they're not in the same house as me, and so I'm FaceTiming with them all the time,
really?
Constantly. And it's actually really quite good for our relationships, funnily enough.
Well, funny enough, I'm finding much the same with the two I've got left at home. I do actually talk to them more.
Yes, yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Now, let's talk about common sense, because there's very little of it going on at the moment. I'm sick to death, and I said this yesterday, of watching these ridiculous briefings that are being held every single afternoon where somebody from the government comes out, doesn't really say very much, takes a bunch of questions which aren't really very helpful, doesn't really give proper answers. It's all a bit of a waste of time, isn't it?
It is at the moment. It seems a waste of time. What I'd like them to do tonight, please, if anyone's listening,
yeah.
I'd like the plan for actually testing to be outlined.
Yes.
And that plan says what we're trying to do, in other words, do the NHS and all the key workers and get them tested.
Yeah.
Why we're doing it, because we want to identify the population, you know, who's got it, who hasn't, because until we know that, really, who's not going to spread it, etc.
Yeah.
Then I'd like to know what the situation is at the moment, how many test kits we've got, and why we haven't got test kits. And then the key part of it is what we're going to do about it. How are we going to get more test kits? How are we going to get people tested so that we can actually really get to grips with the subject? And I think the plan, that could be put out in one of these daily briefs as a statement and almost not much longer than that. And then detail can be followed in writing.
But all that will happen then, of course, is the same suspects will turn up and ask the same questions as to why this wasn't done earlier, why couldn't it have been done in January or February? I mean, you know, we had Philip Lee on yesterday saying, why didn't we spend £500 million 3 years ago on a load of ventilators? And I said, well, quite simply, Philip Hammond would not have given you the money to do that because you didn't need them then.
It's all very well criticising. The fact of the matter is, as far as I'm concerned, the government's done pretty well up to now. What they are actually not answering the exam question is, you know, how many tests have we done? How many test kits have we got? And where are we going to get them?
Yes.
Let's actually have that done. Because apart from that, they've done pretty well. I know we're Germany are miles ahead of us. They always are. It's a bit like football. But the fact of the matter is, we are the United Kingdom. We've got to sort this out.
Yes.
We will.
But Germany, you know, people talk about Germany all the time, right? Germany's actual number of cases is quite high. Their number of deaths is quite low. But that could change. You know, we don't know yet whether they're getting it right. And yes, they are testing more people, but we don't yet know whether that's going to work. I was watching last night the Deputy Chief Medical Officer, Jonathan Van Tam, explaining very clearly that actually this antibody test is not necessarily the answer. Because, again, all it tells you is that you haven't had the disease up until something like 28 days before they test you.
Yeah. I mean, we are actually feeling our way through a cloud at the moment. Now, the fact of the matter is, we're trying to do our best. Now, although these ministers are standing up, if I was doing it, I would say, look, I don't know the answer to that.
Mm.
Or, you know, I'm afraid I made a mistake on the internet the other day when I sent out a post and it was erroneous. So the best thing, if I was a real politician, I wouldn't apologise. I'd make some excuse. What I went straight back and said, I've made a mistake. Mm. I'm sorry, I've done it. That kills it. Why don't people realise that when you make a mistake or when you get things wrong, apologise? We are British. We understand that.
Yes, exactly right. Now, you know, you and I were in Bosnia. I'm not going to say together because that's insulting because you were there for doing a lot better of a job than I was doing. But, you know, the logistical squad that I travelled up to Vitez with, right? These are guys who know how to deal with all sorts of problems in foreign countries, in war zones and all of that. Some people have already suggested to me that maybe there's something, a role that the army could take on. I know that some reservists have just been called up. But, I mean, there's a lot of common sense in the armed forces.
Yeah, that's right. Well, locally, they're bringing stuff to Bromley, to my own constituency.
Yeah.
They're bringing in protective equipment. They've obviously got a real shift on building this hospital in the Excel Centre. 3,000 reservists. These are guys that a lot of them will actually be sitting, like I am, stuck in their house. They'll be delighted to be called up to do something, you know, to get away from the four walls they're looking at.
Yes.
I mean, these are people that have some medical experience, some logistic experience, some engineering experience, but fundamentally they're organized. You take a squad of men in with a corporal, and he says, get on with it, boys.
Yes.
Oi, you're slacking, get on with it.
Exactly, and they've been very good down at the new Nightingale Hospital, and that's where a load of new volunteers are going to turn up today, which is a fantastic sort of exposition of what we are very good at here in this country, and that's helping each other.
Well, I have to say, I mean, locally in Bromley, we've got 3,600 people who have volunteered to help the vulnerable.
Yes.
That's amazing.
It is.
I mean, that's spread across the country. I'm not saying Beckenham and Bromley are any more than anywhere else. Quite across the country, people are trying to help their neighbours. I tell you what, Mike, I've got one thought. You know, we've had all this bitterness over Brexit.
Yeah.
Maybe the country's one advantage of this, dare I say it in inverted commas, one thing that will be good that comes out of this is that we might come together as a country once more.
Well, I'd like to see that, because I'm afraid to say, Bob, that there are some elements of the media in this country and of the political class as well who are content to keep poking the bear, if you like, and trying to make political points and score points on all manner of different things, which are frankly unhelpful and quite perversely untrue.
Well, that is quite possible. That is the nature of the beast in a democracy. Unfortunately, we sometimes have to put up with it.
Yeah.
The trouble is, I hope sensible, normal people look at the situation and say, well, that's not right. I don't agree with that.
No.
I don't agree with that at all. I mean, I'm just amazed. I was talking to the police yesterday. The police around here say they don't expect to have to issue out penalty notices to anyone here, because the vast majority of people now are actually obeying the instructions to stay inside. You know, a week last Sunday, we had all those idiots out as though it was a sort of bank holiday in June.
But that's another thing, and I know you've got to rush off, so I'm going to let you go, Bob, but that's another thing that we could do with a bit more guidance on, and that is from the government, precisely what their view of the police's activities are and whether they should be allowed to approach people because they're having a walk in a public park or a walk in the Yorkshire Moors. I mean, surely that's OK, isn't it?
Yes, but I think the police have got every right to approach them. But what I got from my local police chief superintendent yesterday, he said that all my officers have been instructed to be sensible and decent about, you know, ask people what they're doing. They say what they're doing and go on. If they're doing something that is a bit naughty, look, could you please go home now? You know, that's the way the police are going to deal with this matter. I have great confidence in the vast majority, all of the police, actually. They're going to do it. And they don't want to say, look, you're fined 60 quid because you shouldn't be here. They won't do that unless, actually, people really irritate the hell out of them.
Yes, no, I absolutely agree. Colonel Bob Stewart, great to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. We'll see you soon, hopefully, as soon as we're all allowed out again, to go and have some lunch or a drink even. That would be wonderful, wouldn't it? 0344 499 1000. Let's go straight to the calls, because we've got loads of you already that want to get on. Elaine is in Derbyshire. Hello, Elaine.
Hi.
Hi, Elaine. How are you doing?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the PPE. So
yes.
I'm a carer, and initially my company were a little bit slow, but at the weekend I got a personal delivery from my boss of PPE equipment.
Oh, good.
And I've got gloves, I've got aprons, I've got masks, I've even got lots of new uniforms so I can change every day instead of having to wash it. They've even sent us an email saying, if you need more, just email us, but please don't, like, sort of hoard the PPE equipment.
Right.
But what I wanted to say is I think the media has been really irresponsible, and they're trying to fight Brexit via coronavirus.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Because, but what they're doing is they're scaring a lot of care workers into thinking they need hazmat suit-type situations.
Yes.
And you don't. It depends on where you're working and what you're doing. A GP doesn't need the same type of PPE as a nursing ICU with someone with coronavirus.
No.
As I'm a care worker, I don't need the same type. And they want some sort of, you know, the film Outbreak. They want people wearing that sort of PPE, and not everybody needs that. You know, they need to understand. And one of the other things I wanted to say about, you were talking about the briefing every day. I said to my husband, because he's a nurse, I'm really getting upset with these people, because Robert Preston, he made a really bad error. He's not retracted it. They're asking the same questions every day because they want that gotcha moment.
Yeah.
These people are scientists and they're used to being wrong. And the other thing is, I would like questions asked like, well, what's happening in Gibraltar? Because Gibraltar's right next to Spain. It's one of our protectorates.
Yes.
And I'm really worried about them. What's happening in the Falklands?
Mm.
What's happening in the little islands of Skye and all these little islands? What are we going to do? How are we going to bring those people into the mainland if there's an outbreak? What are we going to do if suddenly the Isle of Wight has an outbreak? Because there's a tiny hospital there. They're not asking any pertinent questions.
No, they're really not. And it's the same people. They go to the same three people every single day. It's completely pointless to me.
It's like I said to my husband, they might as well write, because they already know what they're going to ask, like PPE testing. Now, testing is important, but even if you tested everyone in the country, it's still not going to prevent people from getting ill and dying. And the other thing I wanted to say is I even saw a Labour Labour MP asking, well, where's Boris? He seems to have disappeared. He's poorly.
Yeah, right.
My husband's currently got coronavirus, right?
Okay.
I've never seen him so poorly. So I can only imagine how Boris Johnson feels. My husband, he looks like a ghost. He said he's never been so sick in his life. It's like a freight train's hit him.
Yeah.
He looks like a shell of a man.
Right.
And Boris Johnson's running the country, you know, and I think he's not doing such a bad job.
Well, he's not, but the point is nobody knows. I mean, you know, the idea that we should have been prepared for this is nonsensical. You know, Boris is still, as you say, self-isolating. Matt Hancock has come out of self-isolation today. My understanding is he will give the briefing today. But I really think they need to get to grips with who's asking the questions.
And can I just say one more thing?
Sure.
I think this is disgusting. Journalists on the BBC saying, well, China's managed to get their numbers down.
Right.
They were welding people in their houses. They had snatch squads snatching people off the streets.
Also, you're not going to tell me, Elaine, that the Chinese have only had 3,000 deaths when countries in Europe, which are tiny, have had more. That's just not true.
We've seen that they've ordered 40,000 urns. Why have they ordered 40,000 urns?
Right.
You know, and the BBC are going after, you know, like, touting China and all these sort of countries as if they're, like, got the panacea. They're doing it by abusing people's human rights. One of the doctors that blew the whistle, one of the lady doctors, people still don't know where she is. Her whereabouts is unknown. You know, it's ridiculous. You know, as if China's, like, managed to just get this under control. And parroting who? Parroting China's narrative? I think it's a disgrace. There's only one government to blame in this, and that's the Chinese government. And when Donald Trump tried to ban, you know, all Chinese flights, he was called a racist.
Yeah.
Instead of going after the British government, who were doing their best with little information, they should be going after the people who are responsible for this, and that's China. Do you know they were buying up PPE equipment for months before they revealed this?
Yes.
They were going around the world buying up PPE.
Yeah, I didn't know that. But, I mean, listen, nothing would surprise me, Elaine. Great call. Thank you very much indeed. All the best to your husband. I hope he recovers from the coronavirus illness that he's currently suffering from. Elaine in Derbyshire there kicking us off with the way that an awful lot of people are feeling at the moment. Very frustrated, very upset, very annoyed. Not with the government, but with the people who are pressing the government on the same questions day in, day out. The same people saying the same thing and getting it wrong, quite frankly. We don't get it wrong here at the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. We want to hear from you. We want to hear the real voice of this country, not the elites in the media. This is Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio with you, of course, until 1 o'clock, at which point Ian Collins will be taking over alongside Kevin O'Sullivan, both outside of the studios today and doing it from home, as many people are having to work from home, of course. We heard earlier on this hour from Julia, whose mother was taken into hospital with coronavirus and had a terrible time but appears to be on the mend. We're going to talk now to Sophia Miles, the Transformers star, who sadly did not have that experience when her father was admitted to hospital. Sophia, very good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, good morning, Mike. How you doing?
Yeah, okay. It's a very sad story that you've got to tell, because not only is this virus so horrible and ghastly and you know, deadly, but that it means that because of its infectiousness, you can't really even hold the people that you're losing.
Indeed, yes, indeed. I was one of the fortunate people, actually, that was allowed into the room with my dad, but I was only allowed 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I know now that those rules have changed since all of this has become, you know, terrifyingly serious.
Yeah.
Not that it wasn't then, but, yeah, I had to wear a visor and full protective clothing, including latex gloves, which meant that there was no opportunity for flesh-to-flesh contact to be able to kiss him or simply to hold his hand and really feel his hand.
Yeah. And how did he get the virus, as far as you know, and when did he get it?
Well, I'm not entirely sure when he got it, but my dad had underlying health problems. He had Parkinson's, and he was in a nursing home, and he was rushed into hospital. And we were told that he had, you know, contracted the virus, and within 2 days he was dead.
Wow. And they tested him, presumably, when he got to the hospital?
Indeed. Everyone was tested as soon as they were, you know, all the people, I think, that were rushed in very quickly were tested immediately, and it took about 48 hours to get the results.
Right. And it seems to be a very strange disease in as much as it affects some people very differently. You know, like we've seen Prince Charles, who's not young, getting a mild version of it and sort of seemingly recovering. Matt Hancock, I think, is going to come out of isolation today. Boris Johnson is still in isolation but doesn't seem to be too ill with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, my dad was very ill with it. He had a ventilator on his mouth. And from what I heard from the doctor, they said that when it gets extremely bad, the way that it kills you is in your respiratory system. So you just end up gasping for breath.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's it, really.
Yeah, I mean, he seems to have got it very badly, very quickly as well, because from what I understand from the people I've spoken to, it's a sort of almost a clogging up of the airwaves. There's a sort of... there's a kind of a phlegm that just gets harder and harder and harder and basically blocks the airwaves.
Oh, Lord, I wasn't aware of that. Goodness gracious.
Yeah, I think that's what happens. And so once it does happen, that's why the ventilator is so important, I suppose. But, you know, it must have been awful for you, really.
It was, indeed. But like I said, I was one of the lucky ones that was actually allowed into the hospital. I know that, you know, my heart goes out to all the people that are now currently not allowed to visit their loved ones for the last time.
Yeah. And what about yourself? I mean, did you get tested or did they offer you a test of any kind?
They didn't, in fact, but I went straight in. That what the medical advice was at that time was to, I don't think they had enough tests at that time, but what they did was advise me to go into self-isolation, which I did. I lived up in the attic in our house and my partner came and passed me food under the door, practically. But what was awful about that was I couldn't be comforted by my partner or give my son a hug because obviously you have to, you know, stick to the rules.
And it's very worrying for your children, I guess, right?
Indeed. Although my son is 5, from what I've heard statistically, kids that age aren't as much as at risk. But I just especially try to adhere to, you know, major social distancing from elderly people. Although I heard the other day from Piers Morgan that various young teenagers are now dying, which is just... It's just awful. I think I feel like this is the worst thing that's happened to our world since the Second World War.
Oh, I think it is. And I think you're right to say that younger children should probably be less at risk, generally speaking. But I think they worry not so much about themselves, but more about you. I mean, you know, like if I was talking to somebody the other day who said that, you know, their child was kind of worried that they were going to die and that the child would be left alone.
Sorry. Well, you just never know. If you have it, you might even not have any symptoms, but yet you can still pass it on to someone else. But that's tragic to hear that.
It really is. And so what about funeral arrangements? Because we've also heard that those can be complicated at this time.
That's been incredibly complicated for us. I mean, luckily, we were kind of first in the queue, as it were, because, you know, at that time, the death rate wasn't so high. But we know that we only have a 10-minute service as opposed to, you know, half an hour.
Yeah.
And also only 4 people are allowed. So we had to decide who was going. And my stepmother, it's so sad, my dad's wife, and I haven't been able to see her to give her a hug. And at the day of the funeral, we will all have to stand metres apart.
Yes. That's awful, isn't it? Well, thank you so much for talking about it, Sophia, and let's hope everybody else in your family is okay, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the big screen again. Are you working on anything at the moment?
Well, I've just finished a movie, although while I say that, it was shut down and we'd shot about 70%. It's a dark comedy called Decrypted, which is all about two agents that come to London to try and track down the man that invented Bitcoin.
Okay. Well, that sounds intriguing.
But
you don't know when you'll be able to finish it, I suppose.
No. At the moment, they're editing what they can. But, you know, no one knows when we're going to be able to come out.
It's so weird, isn't it? It's such a weird time. It really is for everyone, I think.
Yeah, they haven't told us. Have they given us any information yet about when the isolation may end?
Not really. I mean, we've been told by the medical officers that we might be looking at a sort of 6 months from now, basically. As a possible sort of, you know, best case scenario. But there will.
Wow.
I think some of them are saying that we might see the kind of peak of the infections after about the end of April. But certainly, I had
this rather dark thought about, imagine people who had just filed for divorce and having to cohabit in the same house. I mean, that must be very, very hard.
Yes.
It's hard anyway, I think, dealing with a family round the clock. It's unusual because most people go to work or their kids are in school.
Right. Oh, I know. Just horrendous. Absolutely awful. Sophia, listen, thank you so much for talking to us. Sophia Miles there from Transformers telling us about the terrible sadness of having to see your father get that terrible virus and die within 2 days, very quickly, unfortunately. Let's talk to Dave, who's in Grays in Essex. Hello, Dave.
Hello. Hello, yes.
How are you doing?
Fine, thanks. Staying sort of isolated.
Okay.
I've heard it said that patients who've recovered from COVID-19 are immune. So why can't they harvest blood from them to use to provide immunity from others? I mean, hasn't anyone even thought about it?
I don't know, Dave. I didn't know that that would be something that would work.
Well, it's simple immunisation, and it's always worked before for every other disease in history.
Okay.
So what's so different about this one?
Well, I don't know. I would assume if that worked, that they'd be doing it, wouldn't
they? Yeah. But why doesn't it work in this time? It would be interesting to find out why.
Yes, well, if I get the next time I get a doctor on, I'll ask them why that can't be done. But certainly, yeah. I mean, it's a good point to make that a lot of people have recovered from it around the world. The current sort of numbers that I can give you around the world, 950,638 confirmed cases of coronavirus, 48,289 of those died. Recovered, which we know about, 202,631. So, you know, I mean, there is some hope for some people. The terrible thing about it, Dave, seems to be that some people, and we don't always know why, are affected much worse than others.
Yeah.
You know?
I do have a suggestion. They use recovered patients in hospitals on the front line to provide sort of the emergency care.
Well, if they can, but I mean, that's complicated as well, isn't it? But Dave, listen, thanks for your call. The point about what the sort of the way out of all this is that nobody seems to really be absolutely sure. And so as much as I appreciate people coming up with ideas, it doesn't necessarily mean that that particular idea, either one, hasn't been thought of, or two, would actually work. Because obviously the British medical authorities, you know, Public Health England, the World Health Organization, I mean, they're all working towards the same end, which is basically to try and bring this virus to an end. And we've heard from various professors, many of whom I've spoken to on this show, who say that, you know, the thing to do with this virus is to let it somehow run its course and basically dry up so that it stops infecting people. And the best way to do that is to continue to try and stay away from one another, because the further away from one another that we can stay, the further away from us the virus is.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio. It is time for our homeschooling section, and I'm delighted to say that we're welcoming back Mr. Greg Smy-Rumsby, the space expert from astronomynow.com, because we're going to talk about gravity, which is one of those things that we all see and live with every single day of our lives, but perhaps don't understand in the way that we should. Greg, a very good afternoon to you. Welcome.
Yeah, good afternoon. Yeah.
Thanks very much indeed. Now, the last time we spoke, you were brilliant about all sorts of scientific facts that you were giving us. And as I always describe you, as a very enthusiastic individual about these things. Tell us about gravity and what it actually is, because it's not something that we probably talk about very much.
No, it's a strange thing. I mean, basically, we're stuck to the surface of the Earth simply because it has more mass than we do. And gravity is all to do with mass, all to do with how much stuff there is tucked into a particular size.
Yes.
So the Earth is 12,742 kilometres in diameter, and it's essentially made of rock.
Right.
There's a little bit of iron at the centre, and there's also some a little bit of air and water on the surface. But essentially, this mass has a specific gravity. That's why rockets have to use very powerful gases in order to get off the surface of the Earth, because its gravity tries to pull them back.
Yes.
You have to sort of get out into space. The sun, on the other hand, is way more massive than the Earth, and therefore obviously has more gravity, sufficient gravity to hold the planets in their orbits around it.
Right. So each planet has its own version of gravity, right?
It does. There's often a misconception that once you get into space, there's no gravity. That could not be further from the truth. There are points where there is gravity that cancels out. They tend to be fixed points around planets. They're called the Lagrangian points after the famous French physicist Lagrange.
Okay.
And we can stick things there. We're going to actually stick the James Webb Space Telescope at one of these points. And when you let go of them, these objects should stay exactly where you've put them, because they're in a tug of war between one world and another, in the case of the Earth, the Sun, and the Moon. And we get these configurations where there is basically neutral gravity, but not no gravity. Everywhere in space has gravity.
So if there was no gravity, what would be the effect of you putting something like that there?
I suppose it would just float around, but you cannot have no gravity. It's the weakest force in nature. There are four forces in nature.
Right.
There's the strong nuclear force, which makes sure that electrons don't merge with photons, but that's another story.
Right.
Then you have
another day.
Another day, absolutely. That's all to do with supernovas and what happens then. And then you get the weak nuclear force, then you have the electromagnetic force, and finally, the weakest of all the forces, but works over the greatest distance, is gravity itself. And before I end this little ramble on, it's interesting, but we don't actually know what is gravity. I know that's going to sound really strange. We know it's the bending of space-time, as described by Einstein in his wonderful sort of 1915 exercises with general relativity and relativity itself, but we don't actually know what causes it. And some physicists would love to discover, wait for it, the graviton, which sounds like some kind of superhero from another planet.
It does.
But that would be cool.
The graviton, I do like the sound of that. So on the moon, for example, where there's less gravity than there is here.
There's less mass, absolutely.
Because it's smaller, right? If you throw a tennis ball, does it reach the ground?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You won't be able to, on the moon, you wouldn't be able to throw a tennis ball hard enough for it to escape the moon's gravity.
Right.
You're just not going to. But it is going to go much, much further into the sky. I don't want to use the word sky, but into the moon's sky.
Yes.
Okay. But if you were on, like, little Phobos, which is one of the small moons of Mars, that's only around about 23 kilometres in diameter. Mm. And if you were to throw a cricket ball, it'll hit you in the back of the head.
Really?
Yeah. It would effectively go into orbit.
Go round. Wow. And so
cool.
would it eventually hit the ground if it just kept going round and round and round?
No. I think it would affect, because there's nothing to slow it down. Because
I see.
There's no air on Phobos. You've put it into orbit.
Right.
So things always start from the point at which they're launched.
Right.
So rockets, when they leave the Earth, once they've got up into the air, they have to fire their engines again once they're halfway around the Earth, otherwise they're going to crash back into the Earth again.
Right, I was going to ask you about satellites.
That sounds really weird. They have to do two little firings, one to get them off the surface of the planet, and then a second burn once they're halfway around the planet, otherwise they're going to come back to where they started from.
Right, because if you launch a satellite and it then finds its way into the correct orbit around the Earth, is it going around the Earth because of gravity, or does it? How does that work?
Okay, so you have a cricket ball and you throw the cricket ball.
Yeah.
It goes a certain distance and then hits the ground.
Right.
And if you were to record that as a movie, you'd see it did a little sort of step of a curve. It would make a curve towards the ground.
Mm.
Now, what you need to do is to get fast enough so that curve is so straightened out that it actually matches the curve of the Earth's surface. But that wouldn't be good enough, because you need to be up above the Earth's friction-based atmosphere. All those air molecules slow you down. Once you get into the vacuum of space, you can get to around about 400 kilometers, which, unbelievably, matches the orbital distance of the International Space Station.
Okay.
And if you're traveling at 27,600 kilometers an hour in one direction, in a forward direction, your curve will match that radius that you're at, 400 kilometers above the Earth. So you'll never actually hit the Earth. You're curving, you're bending because of gravity, but that bend over time will become an orbit.
Tremendous. And so people, very clever people like yourself, will have worked that out. So you know exactly how far to be out in order to keep going around.
Oh, yeah, we can use Newtonian physics for that. Isaac Newton came up with the gravitational constants. We can use that. There are slight deviations from that, as we discovered in 1915 with Einstein's
yes.
thoughts. And we could start to map out slight changes because of the strangeness of the universe itself. But Newton, you could use Newtonian physics to map an orbit of the moon, of spacecraft, of why we put them so far out in space that they stay over the same point of the Earth's surface and give us communication around the Earth.
Right.
Geostationary satellites. Most TV broadcast companies use those.
Yes.
So, yes, we can do that with quite simple mathematics. Yeah.
Okay. And Newton didn't really discover gravity. That's probably the wrong word. But what about Archimedes before him? Because he apparently discovered the centre of the gravity of a triangle, I'm told.
Yes. Well, there are several people. For example, Kepler, who was an old man when Isaac Newton was a young upstart, he effectively modelled the motion of the planets with three simple laws. One was that all orbits are elliptical.
Mm.
The second law was that you draw out a triangle from the sun to the orbit, and as the planet, because of the elliptical shape of the orbit, as it gets closer to our star, it has to travel faster, because that triangle that it draws has to have the same area all the time.
Yes.
So as planets get closer to their parent body, i.e. the Earth closest to the sun, we're actually travelling slightly faster than we would be when we're further from the sun.
Mm.
So our seasons, for example, are not the same length. And I believe I covered that the other day.
Yes, with the leap year scenario. Yes.
Yeah,
and is gravity,
because of gravity.
And is gravity uniform, finally, on Earth? Is there any part of Earth where there is less gravity than anywhere else?
Oh, you're absolutely right.
Mm.
Yeah, right, absolutely. We call these mascons. In other words, there are areas of greater density underneath the Earth's crust, within the Earth's mantle,
mm.
that provide slight differences in how the Earth sucks in the way of gravity.
Right.
And spacecraft are affected by this, and we have to map out those mascons if we're going to use spacecraft in a particular way, such as GPS.
Yes.
We do need to know exactly where those spacecraft are in space in order for us to understand how they're going to map the Earth's surface so we can use it and triangulate our position with those spacecraft to find our location.
Right.
And so we do need to understand it. And you're quite right. Yeah, there are various varying gravitational sort of sucking actions, as it were, on the Earth's surface if you map them out. I'm using dreadful English. I can hear it.
No, I like it because you're making it very clear to people, which is why we want you on here. So are you telling me that there's a place I could put my bed which I would find it harder to get out of?
Yes, but it would be a tiny fraction. You have to use real sort of delicate instrumentation to map
yes.
it. But it is noticeable to that type of equipment. Yes, it is.
Okay, final question. And I know I said the last one was a final question. What about black holes? Are they subject to gravity, or is that a different force?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We have to travel at 9.8 metres per second in order to match the gravitational suck of the Earth.
Yeah.
That's effectively it. So going faster than that, you'll escape the Earth's gravity. With black holes, that is much faster. In fact, you need to be travelling faster than the speed of light. Well, that's not possible.
Right.
And that's the reason why they're called black, because the light which they make cannot escape their surfaces, cannot escape their environments. So we do not see the light of black holes at all.
Right.
What we can just about do is to take a photograph, as we did last year, of a black hole at the center of a galaxy. We can do that just about with the Event Horizon Telescope. And that was a very, very challenging task to do it anyway. But yes, black holes effectively have so much suck that once you go beyond a certain point, and technically it's called the Chandrasekhar limit, once we go beyond that, which is the event horizon, we lose connection with this universe. We actually decouple from whatever the physics is of this universe. We lose that integrity.
Wow.
So science fiction like to write it up that we could travel to and at the other side
of the
universe
dimension.
Or whatever. But to be honest with you, you've actually lost connection with this universe. It's really weird.
Wow. That's like wormholes and things, but maybe another conversation for another
time. That's what the science fiction writers do.
That's what they do, yeah.
All that red.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, listen, Greg, a pleasure as ever to talk to you. Thank you so much. Greg Smyrumsby there with the most amazing factual explanation of gravity. I really think he's my favourite guest of all time. He's fantastic. If you've got any suggestions for things you want covered in our homeschooling section, by all means, do let us know. You can tweet us, of course, at Talk Radio, at IROMG. We'll have another one for you tomorrow. We'll take more of your calls coming up next because the show goes on, but there's not much more of it left. 0344 499 1000. Also, breaking news right now, Eddie Large has just died after contracting coronavirus in hospital. Apparently, he had been suffering with heart failure. Eddie Large of Little and Large fame, of course. This is Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. We've done Plank of the Week this week, by the way. At the moment, it's unfortunately suspended from being filmed because we can't get into the TV studios here at News UK. But what we have done, as we did last week, is made it into a podcast. And John Ashmore from CapEx and Dawn Neeson from the Daily Star and Woman's Own and This Morning and all the other things that she does has joined us. And we've come up with quite a list of 10 people or even things which have made the list. And I think you'll enjoy it. So do get on that. You can find it in the same place where you find the podcast for The Independent Republic on iTunes, on Acast and elsewhere as well. Let's go to the phones now, though. 0344 499 1000 is the number. Natasha is up first. Hi, Natasha.
Hi, Mike. Can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
Can you do a Meghan impression once a week to keep our spirits up?
I'll do it once a day, if you like.
Yeah, you can do it once a day. I was just saying to your producer, whoever answered the phone, I did have to go to the supermarket yesterday, and you came on doing it. I was nearly doubled over. It was so funny.
Well, I think the thing is, I find these people to be completely and utterly irrelevant, but hilarious at the same time without them knowing that they are.
I mean, it's difficult. On the one hand, we shouldn't give them the oxygen of publicity, but on the other, it does bring a smile.
I think it's all right if we're I think it's okay if we're ridiculing them, to be honest.
I know. Anyway, so I just wanted to pick up. You said earlier on you thought that public sector workers would be on furlough if we weren't working.
No, I said quite the opposite. No, I said I think that public sector workers will just keep getting paid regardless of whether they're doing anything or not.
No, that we're not. Apparently, I've been sent an email saying that I will not be entitled to furlough, and that I would be the job I do is being suspended at the moment.
Right, is that in the public sector?
Yes, in the NHS.
Okay.
And I've been told that we will be redeployed, apparently, in the trust somewhere.
Right.
But as you know, we've been on lockdown for 10 days. I haven't worked for 10 days. They are just not coming up with any information. It's very frustrating.
That seems bizarre, doesn't it? Because you'd think the NHS would be the one place where they need people.
Yes, and I don't really want to go into too much detail.
No, that's fine. I get that, yeah.
So it is very strange. I mean, I absolutely agree with you that I think the government's doing as good a job as they could probably do. Nobody knows. It's all a new situation. But I think, you know, it's just odd that we're absolutely getting no information. And I know my line manager's getting very frustrated.
Yes.
She can't tell us what we're going to do. So I'm sort of in limbo. I can't register to be a volunteer as such because, you know, they might suddenly tell me, well, no, actually, you're going to be working here.
Yes, right.
So at the moment, I just feel, you know, just sitting around being sort of a bit wasted, really.
So are you not actually getting paid at the moment, then?
Well, at the moment, again, they haven't said. They've just said, because the job I do hasn't officially been suspended.
Right.
Although the
sort of section has or something, really. Is that what you're saying?
So people have taken it on themselves. The job I do, you can't do because you'd be exposing too many people to going out.
Yes.
And about. So more of a local level, they've taken the decision to suspend the job, but they can't do anything official until higher up, the echelons, say, no, we're going to suspend this.
Right.
So we're in a really weird situation. So at the moment, I suppose I'm getting paid, but we're not entitled to furlough, so it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yes, absolutely. Well, the trouble is, I mean, and I have some sympathy with the government here because it is a massive problem that they have to deal with. There are things they're getting wrong, obviously, and I'm pointing those out as we go. But it's a terribly difficult kind of, you know, huge monster to wrestle with, isn't it? Because there's so many bits of it that they've missed out.
It's very easy to pick fault, isn't it?
Well, it is.
But, you know, I know, it's all very difficult. But the World Health Organization probably hasn't helped now by saying that actually we may need to be wearing masks because now there's going to be a massive rush.
Yes.
People trying to find masks.
And if you talk to most doctors, they'll still tell you that masks are not much use to you, really, unless you get a proper medically sort of fitted mask, which makes it airtight and that makes nothing pass through into your mouth. Even those, if they get moist in any way, can sometimes hold on to germs that otherwise they wouldn't do.
Well, I was in Tesco the other day and the lady serving me at the till looked like Dick Turpin because she'd got this hanky tied over her nose.
Right.
And we're sort of sitting there, and I think they probably don't do anything. There's one supermarket that's been quite quick on getting the screens round the tills.
Yes.
One of the cheaper supermarkets that begins with A. They've been very good.
Okay.
One of the more upmarket ones that was supposed to be getting them in still hadn't.
Yeah. I'm still finding it all a bit bizarre in supermarkets because I've stopped going to the big supermarkets, but I do occasionally pop into the smaller sort of metro size ones. And while they control the numbers going in, once you're in there, there are people just coming up and standing next to you, you know. And I'm kind of looking at them like, what are you doing, you know? Or, you know, because I'll step out of the way. If somebody wants to walk past me, I'll try and walk to the end of the aisle and let them do that. But some people clearly still in their head don't get it, you know?
I know. It's very difficult, isn't it?
It's really tough. Anyway. Well, listen, Natasha, keep us informed, if you can, of what you're doing. And we'll see if we can make some sense of it all. Thanks very much for calling. Joe is in the Wirral. Hi, Joe.
Morning, Mike.
Morning, sir. What can I do for you?
Great, great show, as usual.
Thank you very much.
Just a few points.
Yeah.
Germany.
Yes.
My wife is German. I've lived in Germany. I've worked in Germany. Go quite often to Germany. Great country.
It is a great country.
And they have a great health service.
Mm.
But it's very wrong to compare our health service with their health service.
A lot of their health service is privatised, isn't it?
Exactly. I was about to say that. A lot. It's a mixture of privates and public health system. Very wrong to say... constantly, even on Twitter as well, that Germany are doing this, Germany are doing that. I'm sure the people in Germany aren't saying, well, let's look what Britain are doing. Look at them. They're doing better than us, or they're doing this.
Yes.
Why do we feel the need to compare?
I know. It's a bizarre thing, isn't it? Because, you know, apart from anything else, it's way too early to judge whether what some other countries are doing is going to work out better in the long run, because we just don't know.
Do you know, one thing I learned from working and living in Germany is some things are better there, some things are better here.
Right.
We're more or less the same.
Well, I mean, as we've been saying as well, this testing that they've been doing, this kind of universal testing, is now being described by some in Germany as the wrong way forward, basically. And what they're now saying is the most intelligent thing to do is to test the people who are working in the front line, and the rest of the population should only be tested when they exhibit strong symptoms that require hospital care. So, you know, testing is not necessarily the answer to everything.
Well, I digress onto testing because my opinion is, and people probably agree with me, it doesn't really bother me. I'm not really bothered whether I'm tested or not.
Mm.
If I get the virus, I damn well know I'll have it. I know I'll have it.
Right.
I don't need to be tested. The test is when you get it and when you recover from it.
Uh-huh.
If you can get the gist of what I'm trying to say.
Yes. I think the point. I mean, the point that most people make about the testing is that the reason that we should be testing people is that if they have had it, then they can go back into the community and they can, especially if they're NHS workers, they can go back to work.
I understand that, but, you know, this testing of the whole population, it doesn't really bother me. It doesn't really... I don't really care whether I'm tested or not.
Okay.
Sound. But anyway, final point. When I've been growing up, I'm 64 years of age. When I grew up, we were more or less told, the experts know, they have the knowledge and expertise to know about things. So listen to them. Because what they say is right.
Yes.
What right have Koonsberg, Peston and Burley have to challenge these people?
I mean, it's their job to challenge them, but it's not their job to advise them on what they should be doing, which is effectively what they are doing.
That's right.
You know.
And it's ludicrous, ludicrous. I mean, this Professor Tam put Mr. Peston in his place, I think.
He did rather. It was rather good, though. I quite enjoyed that.
Quite right, quite right. A final thing to say, Mike, is I don't think you could do Koonsberg, Peston and Burley's job because you wouldn't ask stupid questions.
It's very true. Although I have been accused of that by former partners of mine, but that's another story. Joe, thanks very much indeed. Clive is in Cambridgeshire. Hello, Clive.
Hi, how are you doing?
Yeah, very well, sir. What can I do for you?
Good. Yeah, I wanted to talk about the announcement today that the WHO are going to look into, or set up a committee to look into, their advice about wearing masks when we go out.
Yes.
Okay, my thought about this is, having done a bit of research on it, that it's an exceptionally good idea. It's an NPI, a non-pharmaceutical intervention, like hand washing. And that if you look at the evidence of that coming through now, the fact that the WHO say if you sneeze, it can go 26 foot in the air and what have you. Mm. If we got together and all started making cotton masks at home, that would be a start until the government can bring online proper, you know, pharmaceutical masks for everybody. Now, they've done this in the Czech Republic, and it started with YouTubers and Instagrammers with the Million Mask Challenge and Masks for All, those hashtags. And if people want to look them up, they can start making masks at home, because these are very, very simple, easy things to do. And we're going to need these masks.
Yeah, but is a cotton mask
letting this go back to
is
work.
A cotton mask not more dangerous than no mask, though, Clive? Because if it gets
it depends on, you know, what you're wearing the mask for. The reason for wearing a mask is that you're stopping yourself touching your face and your nose and then putting your hands on things. The other thing is that if you do breathe in inoculum which has the virus in the air, you're going to breathe in a lesser slug. It won't protect you, but you get a lesser slug, which gives your body more time to get its antigens going to fight it.
Yes.
And you will get a lesser reaction to it, the less you take it. That's what the doctors are
saying. Well, that's not what doctors... But that's not what all...
And then they're falling sick.
Yeah, but that's not what all doctors say, Clive, because you may get a lesser initial intake of the virus, but the virus will then be on the mask, and then you will then be breathing it in for the rest of the day.
Yeah, I think, the primary reason really is to stop people touching their faces, sneezing out, coughing out. It also shows psychologically your social distancing. I mean, if you look at the country...
Could you not wear a Prince Harry mask then for
Taiwan,
that? Could you not, like, wear a Prince Harry mask or something then?
Which use masks.
But, I mean, if you're just going to want something to stop you touching your face, then you could just put a scarf around you, couldn't you?
Exactly. Yeah. No. You're absolutely right. I mean, I'm thinking of any non-pharmaceutical intervention which will help. Now,
how about a burqa?
Your bottom dollar in 10 days' time, the WHO are going to come back and recommend if you go outside, you need to wear a mask, because the big hot spots of catching this virus in the future are going to be supermarkets and pharmacies.
Yes, I agree.
Where people gather.
Yes, and that's where they're still moving too close to one another. Clive, thanks for your call. Got to run.
Talk Radio. Across the UK. Online. On DAB. And on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham. On Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday, on Talk Radio via DAB, online, or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.